Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I'm calling to you live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have a fantastic show lined up for everyone today. We have my co-host and friend, Linda Feinholz, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in live this week from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. How are things over on your half of the continent?
They are beautiful. Sunny, warm, not a cloud in the sky. Just perfect weather, perfect temperature.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Same thing on this coast. It's wonderful when we can look at the entire continent and say, it's a gorgeous day.
Especially when my day started out with my mom calling to say that they were going to have snow today.
Oh, no. Okay, everybody.
Way better to be down here.
Exactly. Head south, everyone. Head south.
There you go.
Oh, my. So, as you know, I have been waiting with great, great, great anticipation for today's guest on our show. I love the fact that this show is all about everything from relationship marketing all the way through how to create a successful entrepreneurial business, in particular because our guest today is someone I would consider to be the consummate multipreneur. She not only is an explorer of this intersection between loving marketing, loving helping clients, helping her clients find the unique aspect, the heart of their business, and masterminding with them both in a group setting as well as serving them one-on-one in their marketing. She herself has built several entrepreneurial endeavors. So I'm so looking forward to having Jules Taggart join us. Jules, welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It's wonderful having you with us.
Hello, Jules. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you too, Gina.
So, you know, Jules, there's so many different things I want to talk with you today, and I know Gina does as well, and I would love us to just start with this aspect of relationship and relationship building and finding the heart, the uniqueness in a particular business. And how did you come to be focusing in that fashion in your work with people?
Well, I think it's what I'm attracted to. So when I look at companies that I want to do business with, there are a ton of options, right? If I wanted to hire a plumber to come to my house, I could hire one of probably 50 people. I'm in San Diego. There's probably way more than that. But just flipping through Yelp, I could find that many people. So what's the one thing that, you know, really separates you from all the other people out there that are doing exactly what you do? And that's the relationships that you build and the stories that you tell.
So how many years have you been making your uniqueness, helping your clients get out of being same as their competition?
I spent about 10 years in the corporate setting doing that. And then 2 years ago, I started my business. Actually, it's been less than 2 years. It was January of 2012. So I've been in business on my own for less than 2 years, but spent many years in the corporate setting trying to do just that. And I kind of came to a point with, you know, working for a large corporation where I felt that I couldn't really do it. And I know that there are ways to do it, but the particular companies that I worked with, there was just a barrier to putting personality into what they were doing. And I knew that if I really wanted to do that and I wanted to go full on with it, I kind of had to do my own thing. So that's when I branched off and started my first business.
So by going off into your own business, so our listeners understand what we're talking about, can you give us an example of a client you were working with who was doing really blah Very, very run-of-the-mill marketing and how you help them find that uniqueness in their business and take that into their marketing.
Sure. My very first client, it was, I guess, my second client, but it was a data company. So this gentleman owns a company, and he basically develops software, and it's a data company. So the software...
As soon as you say data, all you can think of is really dry, really boring, staring at computer screens.
Right? Guys in gray suits? Yes. Absolutely. So, and this gentleman is anything but. He is he's a funny guy. He's very laid back. He wears jeans to work, which, you know, that's not very, very odd here in Southern California, but he's not the typical data guy. And he wanted his customers to know that, but he didn't know how to do that without losing credibility in his industry. And so he was going to a conference, and he said, I want to be that guy at this next conference. I want to be the guy that everybody's talking about in the hotel bar and everybody knows about. How do we do that? And so this is when Twitter chats had kind of just come about, or they were just sort of gaining popularity and people knew how to use them. And so I suggested that we do a Twitter chat for his audience before he got to the conference. And during that Twitter chat, he soft launched his new product. And before his flight landed in Vegas, he had sales coming in already, and he hadn't even hit the conference floor yet. And everyone was saying, you know, what are you doing? Tell me more about this. And it was because he got on this Twitter chat, and he was really himself. He talked, about his products in a conversational way. He told stories, and, you know, as obviously you guys are Twitter users, you got to tell those stories quickly in 140 characters or less, and it made a huge difference in the way he was perceived by everyone else, but they still took him seriously, and I think that was the intersection that he was really looking for. So that was probably the first experience that I had with something like that.
And now when you think of him as a client and you look at helping him craft his marketing, how many different touch points with his customers are you helping him create? How many different media are you helping him get his message out through? That wasn't very grammatical, but whatever.
I totally understand what you're saying. Many. And I think that's the key to relationship marketing is that you don't just, like, do the ta-da method where you put, stuff on your website and you're like, hey, look at me. You're going to buy my stuff now. That's not how relationship marketing works. So I just actually rewrote all the copy for his website. He's had the same site for a couple of years, and he was ready for a refresh. And so he just actually launched that, like, last week. And so rewrote all the copy for his website. But along with that, it brings up so many opportunities, other opportunities to get in front of new people again and to get in front of people that you've been talking to for a while in a new and different way. And so he's looking at adding a bunch of customer service type offers one of their big things with this company is that they do some really excellent customer service and they are very high touch. And so with that, he's trying to figure out how can he be different in his industry. And that's one of the things that people really struggle with is they don't necessarily have one-on-one contact with someone at the company that can help them implement these systems and this software. So that's one of the things he's doing to differentiate himself. But with that, it comes, kind of an entire shift in how his team does business and how they reach out, how often they reach out, the kinds of things that they're saying, the way that they're speaking, all of those things kind of factor into it. So we're looking at all of those things as he moves forward with this new, I guess you could call it a rebranding. It's basically a refresh of his old brand.
And he was not someone who was new to his industry trying to make a new entry. He was someone who had an established business.
Mm-hmm. He did. Yeah, he had been in business for about 5 years by the time I worked with him. So it's been a couple of years since we first worked together. So he's been in business about 7 years now. And his business has really changed. A long time ago when he first started, a lot of it was downloads of the software. And what he's finding out now is that a lot of it is people wanting conversations about the software. How do I use it? How do I install it? How do I make it work for me? How do I maximize this tool, those kinds of things. And that's where there's a gap in the industry where other people really aren't providing that one-on-one. They have tutorials and they have videos and they have all these things that are, don't require their time, but time is valuable. And he's decided to give his team's time as part of the value of the product that he sells.
I love that he is understanding his need for relationship building with his customers. Is he having to create, are you and he together having to create a change in the mindset of the rest of the members of his company? Or were they already sort of kind of the type of people who wanted to go and create customer connection and relationships?
You know, I think he has hired some really awesome people, and the one of the things he looks at, and we haven't discussed this specifically, but my guess would be one of the things that he looks at when he hires them is how are they going to fit into the culture that he's created. He's very much, and I love this, he loves life. He loves his business, and he's obviously excited about it, and it gives him a lot of joy. Life is the reason for business. He wants to have a great business so that he can live a great life. And so he likes to travel, he likes to go places, and he wants people that are there that are on site that understand his business and understand the way he wants it, you know, things to roll, and so that they can be there when he's not. And so I think he's hired some really cool people that are able to step in and act just as he would in that same situation and make decisions the same way he would and give more than what's expected. And I think that's one of the things that really sets them apart is, you know, I mean, just like Zappos, if you call Zappos and you're asking for something and you're very rarely, I mean, I've never been disappointed by Zappos. They always go above and beyond and just do something that you never expect. And I think that's one of the same things that my client does. He does a thing that is unexpected and people are grateful for it and they recommend it because of it.
And there's a cycle in creating a sustainable business, and it's everything from having the vision to setting up the business, as you said, so that he can go on vacation, do his traveling, and know that the business is sustained because the people he has on board as his team, the systems that he has in place mean that his customers will have that continuity of experience from everyone on the team. It's not dependent purely on him.
Yep, absolutely. And then, you know, he's hired recently a couple of people, and every person that he hires, everyone on the team seems to kind of know how things roll. And I don't know that these are formalized processes. Maybe they are. But there definitely is a vibe among team members that everybody sort of gets it.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he's got a cool business for sure.
Makes me want to, do I want to go back and get into data mining and, you know, data management?
Hey, you know, if you're in a dry business, that's the thing. I think there are a lot of dry businesses out there, right? Or dry industries, at least, traditionally dry. And there's so much opportunity there. I mean, if you're a copywriter like me, there are a ton of copywriters that are bold and crazy and wild and fun. But when you get into like insurance, there's so much more opportunity to be bold and crazy and wild and fun because nobody else is doing it. And so I think there's so much opportunity to do it, but there's also in some cases some fear, I guess, of same thing as my client was experiencing, not really wanting to still be taken seriously. So how do you do all of that, but then people still understand that they can trust your brand. And that's a fine line for sure.
Right. And now your brand, in a sense, is tied with AMP and Pivot, the name of your business.
Right.
How did that naming come about?
You know, I've been in business since January 2012, but I decided to rebrand this summer. And my original business name was Smack Lab Marketing. And I thought that was such a great idea, you know, launched my business. I thought this is a great idea. And then I found out that, you do a little urban dictionary search and you find out that a smack lab is not something you want to be related to at all. So, So I decided I wanted to change my business or the name of my business. And I was trying to figure out what is it that I do for people? Why do they come to me? And most people come to me for two reasons. They either want to amplify their message, that's the AMP piece of things, or they want to make a change and pivot in their business. And usually it's pivoting with their messaging. So those are the two big reasons why people hire me typically. And so I thought, okay, well, let's put those in the name. So that's kind of how the name came about.
Do you find you have people who come and are actually simply confused? They feel they should be, quote, doing something more powerful with their marketing, but don't even know how to proceed, what questions they should be asking themselves?
Yeah, a lot of times. I think a lot of times people want to do something different than they're doing. They're just not sure how it looks for them without copying somebody else doing it really well already. And I think that's a struggle. I work with a lot of people who will say, hey, I want to be more like, and fill in the blank of, you know, one of their competitors. And that's not how you grow. Being exactly like another company is not really the best way to grow. So they have to figure out how do they do it in their own way. How do they add more of their personality to what they're doing, but not do it in a way that's already being done somewhere else or doesn't resonate with who they are. And I work with a lot of solopreneurs and people who are their brand. So, you know, they're very visible in their brand. And that makes it, honestly, a little bit easier because they can talk, you know, once they start to realize, they can talk about themselves, they can share their own personal experiences, and they start to weave that into their brand. Now, the brand, it's not about, you know, them necessarily. Well, I mean, I guess it is, but it's not like you have to talk about yourself all the time, but there are ways to weave it in where you are felt in everything, in every page on your website, in every blog post that you write, in every product that you launch, your personality is felt by your readers and your customers. And that is what people, what I work with most on people.
Very cool. You talk a lot about this notion of disruptive branding, and I would love if we could spend some time talking about the distinction between marketing, distinctive marketing, and disruptive marketing, because I can see them as being three completely different mindsets and approaches mm-hmm. to getting known, to getting one's brand out there.
Yeah, and I think marketing, I was just writing a little bit the other day of the difference between sales and marketing, and you know, I think sometimes they're tossed in together and they are so very different. So the distinction that you're talking about is between basically three different types of marketing. Am I right on that?
Or the underlying purpose behind it, because disruptive to me means something really distinctive. Well, now I'm commingling them. I'm used to, in a business sense, thinking about disruptive strategies, like how you literally disrupt an entire industry because of coming up with a new technology or a new approach to service and so on. So in the marketing arena, when you talk about disruptive branding, what is it that you mean by that, or what's an example of that?
Well, I think most marketing is pretty vanilla. It's here is my product, here are the benefits of it, you know, maybe here are the features, and there it is. Please buy it. That's regular old marketing. Distinctive marketing is when, at least in my opinion, where you do put your personality into it and you start to, it becomes a little bit more of something that people follow and people really get excited about and tell other people about. And then disruptive branding, like you said, is something that totally changes, and that takes a lot more work and it takes a lot more risk. And I think it's a little bit scarier for most business owners. You don't have to go all the way to any extreme. You don't have to be super boring and you don't have to be super disruptive. If you can move a little bit towards disruptive, you're going to be doing something different than you're doing right now. And your customers will notice that. And the people who aren't yet your customers may notice that too.
Is there an example that you could share of someone who decided to go way out on the disruptive end of the scale?
Oh, man, I'm trying to think. Most of the shifts, honestly, are they're not crazy. You know, people comment to me and they say, help me, if they were asking to help them with disruptive branding, which, by the way, nobody ever asks for that, like word for word. But if they were saying that, they're not wanting to totally change every single thing that they're doing, but it feels disruptive to them to make small shifts. And I think small shifts really are all that most people need because it is disruptive in your own business and in the flow of your own business. So if I started, I blog weekly and I send out an email with at least one post a week. And if I started completely shifting what I was talking about or completely changing the way that I do things, that would be a shock for probably some of my readers. And I'm not saying you should necessarily shock people, because I think that that's sort of flash and bang. It's over quickly, and then people forget about it. But if you can start to shift the story and shift the way people perceive your business over time, that makes a difference.
Understood. I don't know if you're familiar with Simon Mannering, who wrote the book We First, and he speaks at conferences, and he himself just led a conference where he was talking about the importance of social branding nowadays in creating a message about what your business values beyond just getting the work done for your clients, your customers, and so on, and finding a way to describe the larger social concerns that you have and figuring out how, as part of your marketing, you literally build that in to the messaging as part of your relationship building with your own customers. I'm wondering, are you finding that part of the conversation that you're having with your folks nowadays?
You know, it's not necessarily something that's my area of expertise, although I know there are tons of people out there that are doing it really well. One that comes to mind is Christina Brzezinski from Ubuntu Future.
Yeah.
She's doing some amazing things with women entrepreneurs and helping them to make their message heard, yes, but meaningful on a greater level. And that's not necessarily something that I'm focused on with my clients, but I see the benefit of it for sure. And I think
she's going to be joining us on one of the upcoming shows, so that's going to be really quite fun.
Oh, great.
Talking with her,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll be a great person to ask about that then, because I'm sure she has a lot more insights than I do on that part.
Yeah, and I was curious because, you know, there's such a revolution going on in both the techniques people need to be using now in marketing, this combination of both how much marketing is relevant in the offline arena, how much in the online arena, and which aspects online and so on.
It's interesting. I work with offline clients. I mean, obviously they have an online presence. They have websites. They have blogs. They're on social media and that kind of thing. But their business is offline. So, for instance, a coffee shop. If I was working with a coffee shop, they have an online presence, but they see their customers and they ask for their customers. They ask for the sale every day in person. So the face-to-face aspect of that and how they position themselves in real life is very important to them. Whereas, you know, for other businesses that handle everything online, they need to put their personality into things, but it's not like we're ever going to shake hands or sit across the table and have a glass of wine together. And, the clients that really have that have another element to what they do. Although
it's interesting that you mentioned coffee shop. Just last week, our guest was Rhino Reinerson, who is a former police officer. He and nine cops got together 4 years ago to buy a bakery that was closing in a little town of Clare, Michigan, population 3,200. In the last 12 months, they've had over 500,000 people go through their little coffee shop bakery, all because of what they do on the internet. It has single-handedly changed the entire economy of a little place of 3,200 people because they are now contributing to the tourism. They've become the number one employer in Clare, Michigan. And while they do ask for the sale face-to-face, they actually ship their donuts all over the world. They've started a line of gift items, T-shirts, coffee mugs, perfumes, you name it, and all of that is available for sale online as well. it was really interesting as we talked to Rhino last week to see how little local businesses really can have a global reach and a global customer base because of the internet. And it's all about their branding, right, Linda?
Yeah, absolutely. It was really fascinating to see how they figured out, as you've been talking about, Jules, creating that uniqueness is, creates the domino effect of creating that distinction in their marketing. That, you know, Gina and I were talking about how much envy we have, or at least I have, over the fact that, you know, here were nine cops, took over a bakery donut shop. Okay, it's the birth of a lot of metaphors you get to use in business,
right?
You know?
That was definitely mutual admiration on that one, Linda. Absolutely.
That was a great interview. And one of the things I really loved about it was just the conversational tone, the way that the gentleman, and I'm so sorry, I forget his name.
It's Greg Reiner.
Rhino.
So he goes by Rhino, yeah.
He goes by Rhino.
Okay, Rhino. That's maybe where I was thrown off. I didn't recognize Rhino. Yeah, but he was the way he told his own story was very much like if you were sitting across from him at his own coffee shop. Now, was anyone that was listening to that interview actually sitting across from him? No, but it sure felt like it. And
mm-hmm.
he did that
it sure
by
did.
Telling his story. Yeah,
and that's really what they have done online over and over again, whether they're doing it with 140 characters on Twitter, whether they're doing it on Facebook, whether they're doing it on their own website. They just act as if they were sitting across from you and have a conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that any business can do, whether you're doing business, you know, face-to-face, or if you're doing a little bit of face-to-face and a whole lot of online like they are, or if everything is online, it can feel personal. And I think the more that it does feel personal, the more people are likely to remember your brand, because everybody else is probably a little less personal. And if that's the case, then you're memorable. And it's so easy to be forgotten with as much competition out there as there is for everything right now. I mean, anything that you buy, you have so many options. So what's the one thing that's different, or what's the one thing that you're going to remember and tell your friends about? It's the people that give you a story, and a story that's easy to remember and retell.
Well, and it's interesting because even Google is recognizing this. A couple weeks ago, Google came out with their most major update to how they rank websites since 2001. They call it the Google Hummingbird Update. And this particular up is really about looking at the conversations that are taking place, using what Google can learn from monitoring conversations, and allowing the conversation to influence how websites rank today. So many businesses, both online and offline, the majority of the traffic that turns into sales comes from search engines like Google. And if you're not out there telling stories, really starting and continuing conversations, you are not going to get that traffic to help you build your business. So conversations just took on a whole new level of meaning 2 weeks ago because of Google.
They totally did. And I think, you know, I was talking with another female entrepreneur who was saying she's really sort of upset about all the changes that Google's made, because she, you know, went to some intense work to do SEO work, and now all of that's gone. And the reality is, after a few weeks of looking at her analytics, she's finding increased traffic. And I think that's coming back to the fact that she's always been telling a good story. But on top of that, she was doing, you know, keyword research and making sure that she had the right keywords in place. And now that doesn't matter as much anymore, or at all anymore, she's actually increasing, because she has always been focused on great content. And great content is...
My students see the exact same thing, and it's been really interesting, because while they all have seen an increase in traffic. They haven't all seen an increase in sales. Those who are seeing an increase in sales while the traffic has been increasing as well are those that really do a better job of telling stories, starting and continuing conversations. And I'm sure that's true of her as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for some, you know, telling the story is one thing, but then making the ask is part of it too. So, you know, just blogging or just writing content for your website or just writing content for social media doesn't necessarily tell the full story if you want sales to come from it, like you said. So maybe that's part of it too.
And we have a lot of people who listen to the show who are relatively new, who may not know what you mean by what you've just said. Can you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Yeah, so
maybe with an example.
Sure. So an example, let's see here. Well, let's go back to this gentleman whose website I just rewrote all the copy for, and he owns the data software company. He wanted to tell more of a story in his content, so we did that. But the whole purpose of it, of his site, is to sell his products and to sell the services that come along with those products and to sell the free service, you know, to make sure people know about the fact that he offers all this extra customer service at no cost. So those were things that we had to weave into every single page, and not every single paragraph, but, you know, there had to be an opportunity for people to make a decision about his company all over the place, because if not, then you're just writing a blog and you're just wasting your time. Or, you know, if you've got copy on your website that's not asking people if they would like to become your customer, and I'm not saying go straight out and ask them right away, but make it really obvious how people can do business with you. I think that's one thing. Sometimes I get to people's site and I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, you're a coach or you're a, you know, whatever. You're a landscaper, but how do I hire you? There's no opportunity for me to do so other than filling out a contact form. And, you know, that just, it takes a while to get a return and all that stuff. So I think if there are opportunities for people to buy from you, they will. If the easier you make it for people, especially if they're coming to your content more easily, you're getting found on Google, traffic is increasing, you have to, you know, make sure that people know how they can hire you.
Well, and you just said something really important. It's got to be weaved throughout, kind of all over, not just on the sales page. So instead of just writing an article that 17 tips to fill in the blank with what you talked about, somewhere in there, tell people how they can get another 17 tips, how they can get bigger results, better results, or faster results than what these 17 tips would allow by selling them into something free that they have to opt in to get or something that they actually have to open a wallet for. That's really important.
Yep.
It's not enough to just have it in one place. It really has to be woven throughout everything.
And I like what you said about bigger, better, faster, because I think that's, you know, we give away so much free content, and I think that is awesome, because I think that gives people a chance to get to know you, a chance to see what your expertise are, and to decide if they trust you or not. But if you want bigger, better, faster results, then that comes with hiring you. And I think, you know, there's a whole slew of bloggers that blog and think, oh, they'll, you know, my readers will figure it out that I want them to buy XYZ. They're not going to figure
but
it out.
But they won't.
Tell them. Right.
Yeah, and it's not even enough to just have it in the sidebar next to the 17 tips article. People have ad blindness today. We are so bombarded with advertising that if the only way you're asking for the sale is by putting an ad up next to the article, people will not click on it. They just don't even notice that it's there in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the ads inside Facebook on the right column. I don't even, like, I just block it out. It just looks like, you know, I don't know. I don't even really look over there.
And I love that you said that, because I've been the same way. People say, oh, it's really effective having it over there. And I, well, it's got to be effective for some people. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep investing in it. But I'm one of those people who says, this is information overload, and I become tunnel vision, looking for the thing I'm trying to see, trying to read, trying to understand, and literally blocking out the rest of it. And so it's got to be happening to others when we're putting out our information as well.
Yeah, and
over the weekend, my husband and I were talking about Facebook, and Bill spends at least an hour a day on Facebook, sometimes more. And I was mentioning to someone else that Facebook makes its money through its paid advertising. And he's like, there's no paid ads on Facebook. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. There's no paid ads on Facebook? Where have you been? And like, you know, down the side of every page, those ads, what ads? I literally had to open his computer, take him to Facebook, and point out that there were ads on the side. He did not know that those were ads.
Yeah, they're easy to ignore for sure. And even the ones that are inside the feed, you know, when they first started, I noticed them a lot. And now I still notice them, especially when something pops up that I'm not a fan of that page and it's a suggested post or something. And it always makes me wonder why it's popping up. But then I know how those ads roll. You know, I'm in whatever demographic they're looking for. But those are easy, you know, getting easier to ignore now too. So what's the next thing? I think once people start doing things, a lot of the same things over and over and over again, this gets back to that disruption. Like at first, those inline newsfeed ads were a bit of a disruption. You look at them, oh my gosh, you're stopping because you're seeing things that you're not normally seeing in your newsfeed. But after a while, you get used to it. You stop paying attention to it. So what's the next disruption that Facebook is going to come up with, or that any particular business might come up with?
I'm fascinated by the whole thing, because I myself trying to figure out how to craft my message and put it out in front of entrepreneurs and multipreneurs and so on. I at a certain point, you just have to develop a really big dose of humor, because you no sooner figure out how to do something than the game board changes. You know, with Google's redesign, with Facebook redesign, the very thing you think you finally figured out how to do becomes either irrelevant or less relevant, or, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, because I run a community for female entrepreneurs on Facebook, and it's a private Facebook group, and there are some other, you know, benefits to it. But it's always been on Facebook, and I'm starting a new community on Google+ now, and it's a totally new game. I mean, I feel like I don't really know where everything is, and I'm still sort of learning it as I'm building it. But I think it's important to try Google+, Google+ communities, and, you know, I've been a part of a few that I didn't really connect with. They seem sort of drive-by, like people just dropped their links in there and ran off and didn't really have a conversation. And so if I want to change that, then I have to try it myself. And it's definitely an education. I'm still learning all the ins and outs of it. But, no sooner do you figure out something that the whole game changes. And
if you need some help with the Google+ community, just let me know. I'd be happy to help. I'll tell you what.
Oh,
I
great.
Love Google+ communities as compared to Facebook, at least for running them. It is so much easier to organize the conversations in a way that makes it easy for people to take part in it as compared to the way that it works on Facebook.
Interesting.
Way easier.
And so how do you find really great Google+ communities? Because that's one thing that people ask me or are asking me more and more, is how to find great communities. And for me, it's been sort of trial and error so far.
Their mistaken idea is that there are as many seasoned communities as might be on Facebook, and it's all very new,
which means you can
become the leader by establishing, facilitating community, and so on. It's a whole new game.
Understand first that Google+ is about people and about conversations. So the easiest way to find good communities is to first find the right people. Now, the nice thing about Google+ is the fact that you can really see how people are interacting in a variety of different ways. One of my very favorite tools is CircleCount.com. If you take someone's Google Plus profile URL and pop that into CircleCount, you can see how engaging this person is. How fast are their circles growing? How many people are adding them to circles every day for whatever period of time you want? When this person shares stuff on Google Plus, how many people plus one it? How many people comment on it? How many people share it? And even how many people reshare it? The better communities are communities that are created by those people who are highly engaging on Google Plus. When I see something that is of interest to me that's posted by a certain person, if that has at least 10 interactions, 10 plus ones, 10 comments, 10 somethings, there will be an option that says View Ripples. And under View Ripples, it's like a little flowchart of circles that shows you how people interacted and engaged with that piece of content. I look for those pieces of content that have levels of ripples, and I check out the people who are sharing so that as I'm looking through the people, I can then stumble across good communities to go into.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's sort of chasing the dominoes.
It is, in a way.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things about Google Plus that it does feel like dominoes. I feel like I meet or connect with one person. If it's the right person, they typically will connect with you with somebody else that's meaningful or helpful or can teach you something or whatever.
Yeah, very different as a platform and the type of relationships people are bringing into this platform.
Mm-hmm. I really think the quality of the people on Google Plus is way better for us as entrepreneurs than it is on Facebook. On Facebook, it's people who just want to be social and won't ever buy, who really aren't interested in something more than just a conversation. On Google Plus, it's the more serious people, the people that really are trying to solve a problem, that really need the help, that are really willing to go out and search for it, that are already on Google Plus.
And active, too. I think that's another thing. Most people, it's so easy to like something on Facebook, and it's easy to plus one something, too, but it seems like the right people are there. And maybe it's, you know, my limited experience with it, but it seems like the right people are connected, and the right people know the other right people. And I don't know. I've been learning a lot from Google Plus and just trying to soak up as much as I possibly can because I think the platform is amazing.
And now you're continuously participating in both of those platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I said at the beginning of our show today was that you're this consummate multipreneur because not only are you helping people figuring out their marketing, but you yourself are creating your own additional businesses, your own pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones that I would love for you to talk about today is what you're doing with Thrive Hive.
Oh, sure. Well, Thrive Hive is this Facebook group I was kind of mentioning. It is a group of women entrepreneurs, and we meet on Facebook, so all of our conversations happen on Facebook. And it's a lot of, you know, questions about growing a business. We get feedback from each other. You know, if I write a sales page and I want some feedback from, you know, people, I will put it in there, and I'll get some feedback from other women entrepreneurs. It is connections, and a lot of people in that group also are clients of one another, so there's a lot of business, a little economy that's happening inside of Thrive Hive. And right now it's about 70 women, so it's small enough that people can really get to know each other and feel like they know the other women that are there, and they know their businesses, they know a little bit about, you know, their personal lives and their families and that kind of thing. And so, and it's not so big. Some of these Facebook groups are so big that you're like, who are all these people? And you, it becomes a link drop, you know, a place where you just drop your blog post link or something and try to get a little traction out of it. And it's not really a, it's like a drive-by, you know, not really a place where you hang out and have a conversation. So one of our goals, and I have a creative partner in Thrive5. She's not a business partner of mine, but we do some creative projects together. Her name is Sandy Sadu, and she's out of Montreal. And one of the things that we, when we created Thrive5, really wanted was a place where actual conversations happened. And I think there's too many Facebook groups and, you know, other communities where it's just, it's all about the person, it's all about me instead of all about everybody else. And so we wanted a place where there really were strong connections happening, good conversations, and business being done. So that's what we created. And it's a Facebook group. There's also a Google, we have a Google group where we kind of share content. We try to keep the, you know, the content and the blog posts and that kind of thing outside of the actual conversation that happens on Facebook. And we've sort of considered moving it over to Google Plus, but we haven't made that switch yet. But Gina, you're influencing me here on potentially looking at that, because it sounds like it might be a good move for us.
Well, like I said, if I can help in any way with it, just let me know. I'd be happy to.
I will. I will. I was taking notes as you were talking, so I definitely will.
And there's a great replay feature on this show as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, you've got something interesting that you're doing in November that I just thought was a kick, and I wanted to share it with our listeners because some of them may, in fact, want to participate and or think about how they can do this. As you and I were talking about it, I'm going to let you describe it in its entirety, but I was thinking about it's a really amazing way to create a distinctive relationship with one's own customers.
Yeah, you know, we are doing a project. Sandy, my creative partner, and I are doing a project called Yesvember. And so in the month of November, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, and I will include myself in this, you get to the end of the year and one of two things happens. You're either crazy busy trying to wrap things up, or a lot of people have, you know, monies that they want to spend at the end of the year, so you might be busier than normal because of that. Or you're the opposite. You're not as busy. People aren't necessarily buying or hiring from you at that time, and so you sort of give up on the year. And I think our focus is to help people who tend to give up around November and just say, "Oh, it's the holidays. I'm just gonna, you know, I'll pick things back up in January." Trying to keep people focused for the month of November and give them a reason to be focused. So we've created this Yesvember 30-day challenge. And it's 30 days, you know, November 1st through the 30th. And you can sign up at thrivehivelive.com/yes. And basically, it's free. You sign up, and then we will, as a we'll form a community. And this is where that Google community comes in, Sheena. Form a community and know what everyone else is kind of working on and stay focused on those things throughout the month of November. And the participants will get some content from myself and Sandy throughout the month with as a guide to keeping focused on one project. So instead of choosing 20 things to finish before the end of the year, choosing one and really, you know, blocking out all the other shiny objects and working on that one thing.
So this could be an ideal setting for people who have thought, I really should put a marketing plan together. And that is one of the activities that so often I find my clients just shove to the back burner and say, I'll get to it, and yet pull it off the back burner and make it the November project.
Yeah, and if you make that the November project, and, you know, people slow down in December, that just happens. But if you get a bunch of stuff done during the month of November, let's say it is that marketing plan, then use the month of December to start putting the pieces in place so that January 1st you really do hit the ground running. So if you create the marketing plan in November and you start creating the content or the website or, you know, whatever it is that you need to get your marketing plan moving, you do some of those pieces in December, then January 1st you really are hitting the ground running. And if you wait till January 1st to start, then you're starting in January 1st. You've got, you know, you're a couple months behind everybody who didn't wait. So exactly.
And we all know what happens in January, which is you're distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
Yeah, and I think January is a time of year that a lot of people think about launching something. You know, it's the beginning of the year, a new program or a course or a book or, you know, a new product or whatever. It's pretty typical for people to launch something in January. Well, if that's the case, then right now is like crunch time. And so I think there are ways to stay focused in the month of November and December also, but we're really focusing on November. And part of that is really choosing one thing. I think that's the biggest thing, is to choose one thing. So that's where we'll start. And then each week there will be a small amount of content. We know people are busy, so it's not a huge amount of stuff, but tools to keep people on track throughout the month.
We started today talking about how you work with people, helping them figure out how what their distinctive story might be. And I would love if you could share a couple of additional examples with people to understand what just how different that distinctive story can be, whether it's about the business, whether it's about the people in the business, the owner of the business, the entrepreneur, and so on.
Well, I told you about one example. I'm trying to think of who people I'm working with right now whose examples I can share. I have a pretty strict NDA with several of my clients. I think telling your story really begins with knowing what it is and feeling really comfortable with it. And I've mentioned this before, but I think most people put the filter on before the story comes out of their mouth. They think, okay, how is this going to sound? Or before the story ends up on a website or in an email or whatever, they think, how is this going to sound? How is it going to be perceived? And that's where most people go wrong with telling their story, is they filter themselves too early. If you write the story or tell the story as it is, no filter. And then if you feel like you need to add in, you know, if you need to tone it down or not tell the whole thing later, decide that later, but get the whole thing out first. So if you've started a business and you struggled and you, you know, the first year was a total wash or worse than that, and, you know, your first three products were complete failures, that's part of your story. And I think a lot of people think, I got to start the story when the success began. And that's not true. I owned a business, one of my businesses, it was called Kickstart Kitchen, and we worked with women entrepreneurs to help them launch businesses. And it was so much fun. It was a year of a passion project, and it was not successful. So at some point it had to close, but that's now part of my story. I think I know more now having closed a business and having had a failed business than I would if I had only had successes. So I could filter that out and not tell that piece, or I could include it and take everything I learned from it and know that that's going to impact everything that I do in the future. And so that's what I've chosen to do. But I think that filter thing is really important. People tend to filter themselves far too early and far too much. And the person on the other side of that story, the listener or the reader, kind of wants to hear the whole thing. We are inquisitive by nature. I mean, we're even inquisitive of, you know, everyday products that we buy. And we kind of want to know who built it, who created it, who thought it up in the first place, and how it came about. And there are so many opportunities to tell it.
And it becomes part of the spice of your life that becomes what differentiates you from what other people are doing. So your client who's working with data, there's a lot of people working with data, and at a certain point, he needs to prove his and his company's capability, and at the same time, people are sticking nowadays for reasons other than you're just capable.
Yeah, absolutely. And capable isn't enough. I mean, there are so many people that are capable out there. And then, you know, if you're capable, you get into the price game. Oh, they're capable, but are they less, you know, is it going to be less expensive for me to go with this guy or this guy over here? So, all of a sudden now you're competing on price, just because you're capable. If you have a story, you're much less likely to have to compete on price, because now you have more value than just the capabilities or the skills that you bring to the table.
Is there a best story or a worst story you've ever had somebody come to you with?
As far as
their own personal walked in the door and said, I need help with my marketing, but here's my story, and they didn't understand the value of it.
I think one company that I work with is just a large, like you would think, just sort of a boring industry. And they have a really large audience, and they said, we want to connect with them more. I can't tell you the whole story. I'm really sorry. I have an NDA that I can't.
No, no, we understand that very well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they came and they said, look, we want to tell our story in a better way. We want to connect with people more on a personal level. But here are the things we don't want to do. And they listed basically everything I would have suggested for them to tell their story. They don't want to add, you know, they don't want to highlight their employees on a personal level. They don't want people to connect, you know, like as their customer service team. They don't necessarily want them to get to know the personalities of the people on the other end of the line. There are so many little things that you can do. I mean, their LinkedIn page, they said, you know, make sure that it's important content. Not that it's meaningful content or things that you would actually want to read or things you'd actually want to connect with, but it's got to be something that, like, means business. And that's so boring. Like, nobody's going to connect with that. So I guess without, you know, sharing the whole story, and I'm sorry I can't, it was just a challenge because they were already set on not telling their story, but yet they told me they wanted to. So I think it was an act, it was a getting them comfortable with it and showing them the benefits little by little. You know, here, let's try one little thing and then see how that works and see how you feel with it and then move on to one other thing. And that's, I think, comes back to that, you know, it's small shifts, not huge changes. When you're thinking about disruptive branding, small shifts, little tiny things, and once you take two or three steps, you're so much farther away than the boring place you used to be, but if you hadn't taken them at all. And I think some people think they have to do all or nothing, and that's just not the case.
Oh, that's such an important point. And thank you for getting that into the conversation, because you're right. I think we see people doing strange and extravagant stuff and think we must match that level in order to amp and pivot.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep, little shifts make a big difference. And especially if people are already paying attention to what you're doing, they are going to notice the shifts, and you're going to attract more people that are noticing the shifts because it's in line with what they, you know, what they believe and what they're comfortable with.
Very true. Very true.
So I just want to let all of our listeners can connect with Jules.
Exactly. So bbdnow.com/Jules, J-U-L-E-S, is a link that will always be in the show notes so that people can get to, yes, Vember and other upcoming programs, Jules, that you may be putting out there. And I'm wondering if there is any, you know, if there's somebody who is sitting here thinking, okay, I really oughta pep up my marketing at this point, is there a first place for them to start or a first thing for them to read and so on?
Yeah, I would say the first place to start if you want to start telling more of your story is on your own about page. If you go to your about page on your website and read it and think about if it's really telling the full story, think about how much you're already filtering out, and then start with a fresh page. Now, you don't even have to post this if you don't feel comfortable with it. But at least open up a new Google Doc or a Word Doc or whatever it is and tell your story the way that you would without a filter, and then see how different it is from your current about page. And are there little pieces that you can weave into what you've got there already so that your customers can know you a little bit more on a personal level, can feel more connected to your products because of the evolution of them, not just the success part but the failure part too. So that would be my first recommendation.
And that's so important. I think our first assumption is we must filter out our failures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easy to do because they're a little painful, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, closing down a business for me was not a fun job, and I had a business partner, and she's lovely, and we're still really good friends. But, you know, it's not fun, and it's not fun recognizing that what you spent so much time, energy, and love, and probably money on is just not the future. It might be your past, but it's not necessarily your future. And I think that's the thing. Like, man, you learn so much more from failure than you do from success.
And it's part of what makes each of us distinctive and what we're able to take into working with our clients, indeed, to help them understand we do understand the challenges they're facing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it makes you more, your clients see you as you're real then, right? You're not just glossy and shiny and perfection. that they can click a button and buy all of that, they're also getting all the struggle along the way. And because you went through that, man, now you know so much more, and you know how to deal with both sides.
Very cool.
Well, we are out of time, ladies. Thank you so much for being here, Jules. We really enjoyed this time we spent together. Remember, everybody, to go get signed up for YesVember right now. I just did. You'll find it at bbdnow.com/Jules, J-U-L-E-S. And Jules, we definitely have to talk about Google Plus, and I want to know more about your upcoming event in Miami.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That sounds fun. Thank you.
Well, take care, and Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, Linda. Great show, ladies.
Take care, everyone.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.